I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. John Elder Robison joins me again. He has just published a new book that's a funny, sweet, engaging, and charming memoir, Raising Cubby, A Father and Son's Adventures with Asperger's, Trains, Tractors, and High Explosives. Mr. Robison's first book, Look Me in the Eye, published in 2007, gave the reader a view onto his life and his late diagnosis of Asperger's. He was 40 when he first found out what he had, which gave his behavior a name. His second book, Be Different, which was out 2 years ago, and which he was on this program to talk about, looked at the Aspergian mind. This new book looks at his son, Jack, known more affectionately as Cubby, his own Asperger's, their relationship, and the unfortunate circumstances their family found themselves in when a prosecutor pursued Cubby with charges that he was a terrorist. Why? Because Cubby, long interested in chemistry, and was inquisitive enough and resourceful enough to want to build explosives in the backyard. Part of this book looks at the trial and gives us necessary insight into the sort of conversations we need to have in society about our reaction to those with autism. It's frequently reported in the press the epidemic nature of autism, its causes, whether it's vaccines or something else, yet there's scarcely any dialogue, especially in light of the tragedy at Newtown. It was quickly reported that Adam Lanza had Asperger's, and in fact had Mr. Robison's first book in his house. Soon enough, the connection with violence and Asperger's was made. I'll get Mr. Robison to tell us about this book, about the discussion that he feels needs to happen, and what we can all do better. This book is published by Doubleday. Visit johnrobison.com for more. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, John Elder Robison. Mr. Robison, good morning.
Yes, thank you for having me on with you today.
Thanks for joining us. So I just thought that this book was wonderful, and I'm curious to know how you work as a writer. Do you work quickly? Do you write quickly?
It's hard to say. I haven't really written books in the presence of other writers, and I therefore do not know how fast they produce books. It's hard for me to compare myself.
And you obviously work on a computer, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Do you enjoy the process of writing?
Yeah, sure. I like writing, yeah.
Yeah, now your brother, Augustine Burroughs, is a noted writer. Did your parents write?
My mother has written a book, The Long Journey Home. My father didn't write books, but he wrote, papers. My father was a professor of philosophy, and he, he wrote papers. My mother wrote books, and my mother's also written books of poetry.
Yeah.
So I guess it sort of runs in our family.
And does Cubby write?
Not yet, but Cubby's only, 23, and remember, I didn't write my first book until I was 49.
Yeah. Well, what do you get out of writing? I mean, I know that your books have helped a lot of people over the years. Is there some enjoyment that you get out of it?
I get a sense that I've done something to help younger people in the world. The reason I wrote my first book was to help young people who are growing up different today maybe avoid some of the pain and shame that I felt as a kid who grew up without knowledge of why he was different and just assuming he was defective. I wanted young people today to grow up a little more empowered and feeling better about themselves, and that really was a lot of the reason why I wrote Be Different and why I wrote my newest book, Raising Cubby.
This book also helps the parents of children with Asperger's, don't you think?
I think it does provide hope and insight, but I think another thing that this book does is it speaks to every dad out there. This isn't just a book about Asperger's. Mm-hmm. I think this this is a book about, having fun with your son, and that's one of your jobs as a dad, to go out and give your son a lot of experiences so he can find his passion and what he's interested in, so that you and your son can have fun together. Too many people who write about books about growing up different get bogged down in disability and struggle, and they forget that every five-year-old boy wants to drive a bulldozer or wants to drive a freight train or wants to go to the top of a skyscraper. And that's where life's at for them, not struggling with a school.
Yeah. Now, you worried a lot as a parent, I guess like all parents do. How old were you when you had Cubby?
I must have been 32 when I had Cubby.
Yeah, so you didn't know yet that you had Asperger's, right?
That's right. I didn't know about Asperger's until Cubby was in the second grade. Mm-hmm. But I did know that I was different. You know, I always believed I was just defective. And so when Cubby was 2 and 3 years old and he was at daycare and he didn't play with other kids, he just sat there, I remembered myself and how I was alone as a child. And I saw myself in my son, and I tried to give him advice based on my own life experience, and I'm happy to say that a lot of that advice worked, and Cubby ended up growing up with friends, something I never had as a kid.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it obviously, it's a better childhood than say, you had, right?
I sure think so, yeah. Cubby had friends and stuff. Cubby was always in a safe household. My father was a violent drunk, and he was dangerous, and I never drank, you know, throughout my son's life. So I think that Cubby did grow up in a safer and I hope a better place.
Cubby was a name that you gave your son. What does he call you, by the way?
When he was about four, I tried to teach him manners, and I told him that whenever he asked for something, he was supposed to say, please, followed by a salutation. So he would say, please, Wondrous Dada, may I have a cookie? And thank you, Wondrous Dada, for the milk. And you know, and I tried to condition him to always call me Wondrous Dada, but it didn't really work.
No. A parent can teach their children stuff, and I mean, you go through that in the book, all the things that you wanted to do with your son, but Cubby has taught you stuff too, hasn't he?
Well, sure, yeah. I think that anytime you you know, you get a kid and, you know, and keep him around for 20 years and stuff, you learn surprising new things. Yeah.
And it really is just there's some marvelous stories in here about the two of you growing, him growing up and the sort. I don't know how to put this. Did you sort of raise him to be like you or to have the same interests as you?
Well, I think every dad looks back at his grown-up kid and says, yep, I taught him everything worthwhile that he knows, don't you think? And so I'm probably no different in that regard. I think that whatever I thought was fun, I would take my son to see, and I figured he would think it was fun, too. And as he got older, he developed more independent thoughts and independent ideas, and he would certainly come up with more stuff on his own, but probably for the first 10 years of his life, Cubby would pretty much do whatever I suggested on our adventure days. Every Sunday, we would go off and have an adventure. And we learned how to do many things together. We learned how to drive trains and how to drive construction equipment. And I reveal all the secrets of that in raising Cubby so that any father who wants to have fun with his son, he could do everything I do in that book. It's all laid out there.
Yeah. It was widely reported after Newtown that your book, the first book, was found in the Lanza house. You told the New York Times recently that your immediate reaction was that it wasn't a surprise because the book was a bestseller and was widely read. But then there was the connection that was drawn that people with Asperger's would have a preponderance to, say, violence, as they suggested with Adam Lanza.
Well, that's not true, actually.
No, it's not.
You know, the media raised that question, but people who follow my career, you know, that I serve on the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee for the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. So we are the top-level autism committee for the U.S. federal government. And when those killings happened, you know, we wrote an official statement. And in that, we said that there is no link between autism or Asperger's, Asperger's is a kind of autism, there's no link between people on the autism spectrum and the commission of deliberate violent acts towards other people. And sometimes people get confused because people with autism can engage in self-injurious behavior. We may get frustrated and bang our heads against the wall. We may get angry and lash out and, you know, pound on our parents with our fists when we're little. But that is totally different from committing premeditated violence against other people. And there just is absolutely no precedent for people with autism committing crimes like that. But at the same time, autism doesn't protect you from other psychiatric disorders. You know, you can be autistic and you can be a victim of bullying or domestic violence. You can be psychotic. You can have any number of things that would be predictive of violence. Autism is not a protection,
yeah,
but it's not a cause.
Yeah. But I guess the prosecutor in your son's case, I mean, he probably has drawn a sort of conclusion that Asperger's means violence, and so I guess that's why he pursued the charges against
him. No, I don't think that's true. No. I don't think the prosecutor even knew about Asperger's in my son. I think the prosecutor got this case handed to her. The recommendation of all the investigating people was that there was no crime. It was just a kid with a chemistry set. And I think she was an elected official. I think she was in political trouble because of misjudgments in handling other cases. And she saw a chance to redeem her career by inventing a terrorist, and that was my son. I don't think it had anything to do with Asperger's, and I don't think it had much to do with my son. It had everything to do with her career.
But
and that is every parent's worst nightmare, that such a thing will happen to your kid.
Indeed, yeah. But there is this prejudice, I guess, or this misconception that's out there. And in the Times piece that I read, where they interviewed you, you've almost equated it to a sort of civil rights question.
That is absolutely true. Certainly, if the Globe Mail here in Canada published an article and they said, the killer had Asperger's, nobody would look twice at that. If, on the other hand, the same reporter said there was another murder in this section of Toronto and the killer was a Jew or the killer was black, what do you think would happen then? The reporter would be fired and the paper would be pilloried for such a thing. And yet, it is still socially acceptable to use Asperger's in what is essentially then a racist fashion or discriminatory fashion in those headlines. And that troubles me a lot.
Do you think we'll get away from that?
Sure. I think so. I think that in the 1950s and 60s, you did see articles that said, yes, and he did it, and he's a Jew. You know, you saw that, and Jewish people stood up for their rights. And they stood up not only for their rights, but for the rights of every different religion, and so you do not see, you don't see articles that say he did it and he's a Catholic or anything else. And you now see, you know, people stood up for race, you know, racial equality. People are standing up now for gay and lesbian and transgendered equality. And I think that autism and neurodiversity is the next battle to be fought in terms of equality.
What can we do as, say, a media consumer to help dispel all of the misconceptions and the sort?
I think to take what I suggested to heart, how you wouldn't tie together a person's race or religion and the statement that there was a murder. So why would you tie autism and the fact that there was a murder when there is no demonstrated connection between the two? I guess I would say that is a result of ignorance, because journalists don't know that there's not a connection, so they think it's okay to ask the question. But it's not. It's not okay to ask that kind of question in an inflammatory manner in a media that sets it in front of millions of other potentially misinformed and judgmental people. Because that's really how racism and discrimination are propagated.
Now, you're a noted public speaker. You talk to young people, I'm sure. Do you find that the young generation, that they get this, that they'll come away from this?
I think that young people on the autism spectrum hear stuff like the headlines surrounding Newtown, and frankly, they find them frightening, because those kinds of headlines, they see them as an excuse for people to bully and discriminate. People read those headlines and they think, I don't want my kid around autistic people in school. I don't want to be around autistic people in the workplace. So that's how it facilitates discrimination, and I think that's very scary for young people. And I think they're right to be scared, and they're right to be angry, and they're right to speak up about it. And I think that in raising Cubby, you know, we didn't just roll over for the prosecutor. We fought, and we won.
Yeah, yeah. Has science told us yet what causes autism?
The best knowledge we have says that autism is the result of a convergence of genetic and some combination of unknown environmental factors. The science also suggests that autism has existed at a fairly stable level throughout as much human history as we are able to examine. And to the extent that there is an autism epidemic right now, the epidemic is more one of awareness. For every child that is identified with autism in Canada, there are between 2 and 3 adults on the spectrum, 60 or 70% of whom probably do not have a diagnosis today. Hmm. So there is a huge unrecognized adult population out there. And it's, you know, it's something that's just been with us as long as there have been people.
Yeah. What has Cubby thought of this book?
Cubby, I think, believes that the story needs to be told in terms of, you know, what happened with the way the prosecutors twisted, you know, his scientific curiosity. I think Cubby also agrees with me that most of Raising Cubby is a joyous tale of a dad and a kid going out and having fun together, and I think that it's a fun story, and I think Cubby thinks the same way, that it mostly is a fun book for any dad.
I read somewhere that you don't watch much television. Is that correct?
It's true, yes. I do not watch much television.
Yeah. Do you spend your leisure time, I would say, reading and the sort? Or?
I read. I write things. You know, I tinker with my cars. I like being in the outdoors. I do photography. So I do, a good variety of things.
You still have that service business where you fix cars?
Yep, it's called Robeson Service, sure. Yeah, we still have that in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah, and it's a money-making proposition now, right? You're not losing money.
Oh, no, Robeson Service is my regular job. I will be back at, I'm at the car company whenever I'm not traveling.
Yeah. This is such a wonderful book. I've enjoyed reading it, and I've enjoyed talking to you today. I hope a lot of people listening to this will buy it.
Well, I certainly hope people enjoy my stories, too. I thank you for talking about them with me.
You're very welcome. The website for more, johnrobeson.com. The book is called Raising Cubby, A Father and Son's Adventures with Asperger's, Trains, Tractors, and High Explosives. It's published by Doubleday. Its author, John Elder Robeson, on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.